This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 7:36 in the morning, Monday the 11th of January, which means that in half an hour or so, we're going to be having the breakfast grill. Noel, tell us what's happening on the show this morning.
That would be Bursa Malaysia. It is one of the largest stock exchanges in ASEAN with more than 900 companies listed and a total market capitalization of 1.7 trillion ringgit. Now, Malaysia and Singapore were about the same size 20 years ago. However, Singapore has now surpassed us. But let's look forward. Will the rise of economies like Indonesia and Vietnam eclipse our stock market? And what is Bursa's outlook for 2021? So Wong Xiaoning will be speaking to Dato' Mohamad Umar Swift, the CEO of Bursa. He will come on the hot seat to discuss some of these issues.
All right, so that's happening after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Be sure to stay tuned. Now, in the meantime, we are turning our attention to what's been happening in Japan, where last Thursday, the government imposed a state of emergency on the wider Tokyo region in response to the drastic rise in COVID-19 infections. Japan's daily new cases now have risen to over 7,000, with Tokyo accounting for over 2,000 cases per day.
The state of emergency will run for 1 month and take the form of a soft lockdown in which schools and non-essential businesses will not be asked to close. What does a soft lockdown look like and how effective could it be in bringing down case numbers? I think that's the question we'll be asking right now.
Indeed, and joining us on the line to discuss this is Jonathan Berkshire-Miller, Senior Fellow at the Japan Institute of International Affairs. Jonathan, thank you so much for speaking with us this morning. Now, the emergency measures imposed in Tokyo are, and I quote, limited and concentrated in order to minimize economic shocks. What kind of restrictions have been put in place and why these measures over others?
Well, thank you for having me on and good morning. Yes, I mean, I think Tokyo is a little bit hamstrung in addition to the central government on exactly how it can enforce some of these restrictions. So I think that's one of the big things to say on the onset. Some of the way that they're looking at this sort of lockdown light, a little bit different from the restrictions that the Japanese government put in place in May, is I think that they're trying to kind of impose on the goodwill of restaurants and bars and nighttime establishments in order to close early. They're also trying to kind of control the amount of commuters through the subways and the public transportation. I think if they're trying to talk to some of the local businesses and ensure that upwards of 60 to 70% of commuters consider working remotely if they can. So there's a range of different ways that they're looking at this. But as you noted, this is not a full-on lockdown that we've seen in places elsewhere in Europe or North America where schools are closed and other establishments are closed. So this is a much lighter version.
I understand the Japanese are quite compliant as in terms of culture, but what's your sense? Is there widespread support for this strategy?
I think it really depends on who you ask. So I think, you know, there are haves and have-nots when it comes to these restrictions. I think if you're in a business or if you're an employee who can adhere to this quite easily, you can work remotely quite easily. I think that's, you're able to kind of adjust. Whereas I think this is really the industries that sit really hard is the hospitality industries, the restaurants, the nighttime establishments, especially the 8 p.m. sort of restriction on closing. I think this is a real, really, really difficult for them. So I think it really depends on which sector you ask. I think a lot of the corporate sector as well is very concerned about this. I think they're worried about especially starting what the quarter one profits might be like after this lockdown. So I think it really depends on which segment of society you ask.
So, John, on that note then, what's the expected hit to the economy from the soft lockdown and what are the alternative scenarios here?
Well, some suggest that it could even, you know, depending on how long this lasts, it could lop off upwards of 1% of GDP per month that these restrictions stay in place. So I think it is quite significant. It is important to note, too, and I think you referenced at the beginning that this is limited right now to Tokyo and three of the prefectures around Tokyo. So that may seem kind of minimal, but when you think of the outsized economic impact and footprint of businesses that are based in that area, and especially in Tokyo, there's no getting around that this is going to be a significant economic impact. And I think it's important also to note that, I mean, this is all coming on the heels of a new prime minister, relatively new prime minister in Japan, Prime Minister Suga, who likely will have to face an election in this coming fall. So there's a lot of economic pressure, and I think this is informing a lot of his decision making.
So Japan is said to be behind in rolling out vaccines compared to other developed countries. What's holding up the vaccination program and how is it taking shape now in Japan?
Well, I think it's just one of the biggest factors that I think is changing things in Japan as opposed to some other countries is their regulatory frameworks. And I think their ability to fast track some of these procedures in the red tape, I think, is not the same or equivalent to some of the processes that we've seen in the United States or in Europe, where they've been able to kind of get around some of the traditional red tape when it comes to vaccine approval, deployment and implementation. So Japan has done a good job, I think, at securing contracts with a lot of foreign buyers, foreign suppliers, sorry, of vaccines, including Moderna and Novavax and others. But what the challenge that they have, I think, is the way that their regulatory framework works and working with local clinics and elsewhere, that it's unlikely that they're going to start having these approved and starting to be deployed until the second half of 2021, which obviously is getting a lot of criticism towards the Prime Minister's office in Japan.
Well, second half of 2021. So how long will it take to vaccinate the entire population, or at least maybe 50%? And how might this affect the Olympics scheduled for July this year?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think that no one, unfortunately, knows, you know, how long it's going to take to vaccinate half the population or even large parts of it. I mean, when I say the second half of 2021, I mean, I think that's more the large scale vaccination. I think there will be more imminent vaccination for vulnerable populations. But I think that gets to one of the key questions is that we do have the Olympic Games coming up this summer. And if we don't have significant segments of the population that have received a vaccine, that's going to create significant challenges to hosting such a large scale event. So I think that is very much on the mind of the Suga administration, in particular after the 2020 Olympics were postponed and the whole process with that postponement happened. So it's a very big marker for them.
So on that note then, Jonathan, you said earlier that President Suga is facing a re-election in August. What is his current standing in with the Japanese society at this point?
I think he was given the benefit of the doubt when he took over from Prime Minister Abe. I mean, he was Abe's right-hand man for several years, and I think that he was seen as a stable status quo leader. And I think that was much of the reason why the Liberal Democratic Party, the ruling party right now, put him into power. So I think, like a lot of new leaders, he had a fairly high approval rating in the 70s. And I think that's very quickly went down. I mean, again, a lot of it, you know, would not even be his own error. But I think he's just thrown into a very, very challenging period to take over the reins, I think, with the situation, obviously, in the second, third waves of COVID, the economy obviously reeling because of that, and also the geopolitical uncertainty with what's happening in the United States, the Japan's key ally, and a new administration coming into Washington quite soon. So I think there's a range of different factors, but he's been suffering recently in the polls.
Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Jonathan. That was Jonathan Berkshire-Miller, Senior Fellow at the Japan Institute of International Affairs, talking to us about the measures that have been introduced by the Japanese government recently to curb the spread of COVID-19 in the country. And I think what struck me when Jonathan was talking about potential vaccination programs coming out, The problem, of course, when you're talking about Japan is that Japan has a significant aging population. So when you have such a large proportion of your population over the age of 70 and therefore at higher risk of COVID-19, how much more difficult is a wide-scale vaccination plan going to be?
Yes, so restriction measures is costing the economy something like 1% of GDP per month. So that's fairly significant. And well, will the Olympics happen, right? That's the big question here. And I think from a political point of view, I think the government will still want to push for it because it might not look so good for them. Obviously, the government, LDP, would want to bolster their chances of winning.
And of course, we'll have to see how the Olympics plays out, right? Olympics 2020 are happening this year, 2021.
Supposed to be happening.
I'm sure they will do whatever it takes to really to get this done, right? Because, I mean, I don't think you can postpone it again, depending on how... it took such an effort to postpone it last year during the... And that time, COVID-19 was still so new. I think whatever said and done, they'll have to have it in some form this year.
Yeah, so this is something that we will be watching quite closely, what's been happening in Japan. But right now, we're about to head into some messages. And then up next, speaking with Syed Sadiq, Syed Abdul Rahman, MP for Moir and co-founder of Muda, on Muda's application to the Registrar of Societies that has been rejected. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.